You're listening to Joe Russell on the Business Networking Show.
Do you need a reliable property management service or lettings agent? PJJS is a well-established property management and residential lettings company in Maidstone, Kent, which deliver an effective and efficient quality service. Call us now on +44 78 55 746 966.
Hello? Can anybody hear me?
Advertising your business can sometimes feel like you're trapped down a well, waiting for someone to respond. Choosing to market your business with fuzzy logic, you won't just be heard, you'll be seen. We offer websites, social media, and content creation packages that are fully bespoke to you and your business. And the best thing about it, we're affordable. So stop hiding and boost your digital presence using the power of fuzzy logic. Visit www.fuzzy.studio for more information.
Hello Kent businesses. Tired of networking events that don't deliver? Synergy Networking Events has got you covered, whether you're a networking newbie or a seasoned pro. Our events make networking a breeze. Meet other businesses without the pressure. Enjoy pre-planned seating table moves and even a buffet. All for just £20 for non-members and £10 for members. Build relationships that last and get a result on your investment.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this week's Business Networking Show. It's a great pleasure to have you with us, and we've got lots and lots of exciting things for you today. So, just to let you know, we've got two amazing guests. I'd like to welcome this afternoon David Shaw, who is a super talented entrepreneur, and Dr. Ross Friday, who, as well as being a chartered psychologist, is also going to talk to us about murder. And you might be thinking, well, how does this all go with business networking? And to be honest, David was looking at me earlier and just sort of thinking the same. But where I'm coming from with this is that we're going to talk about these gentlemen's career paths, their business journey, but also let's bring it back to some networking, how we got to meet, what business networking does for their businesses and how they use it. And along the way, we're going to give some shout outs and tell you about some networking opportunities and really share some business journeys and stories with you. So I hope that you're going to enjoy this afternoon. I've been really looking forward to this one. In fact, I'm going to say I've been a bit overexcited. So, David, first of all, welcome to the show. It's lovely to have you here.
No, really pleased to be here. Looking forward to this. Should be fun.
Good, good. So, David, we've only met briefly once at a networking event. So tell us a little bit about, we met at Synergy Daytime at Whitstable. That's so right. What took you, what was your journey to get to Synergy? How did all of that happen? How did you find Linda?
I've known Linda for a long time, actually, back from when she was doing We Do Social.
Okay.
So knew from those since I was used to be a big part of the digital scene for many, many years. So, yeah, I was aware of Linda that way. And I'd seen Synergy coming up on social media for quite a few months. Initially went to try and join Whitstable Evening, and then we got our application went in, but we got locked out right just before we went to join then. So I was keeping an eye out for other events that were coming up, and then I'd met Bethany at a different networking event, and we'd connected on LinkedIn, I believe, and one day I just saw that she said she was launching Canterbury, and I just jumped on it immediately. And I'm pretty sure I was the first one for Canterbury, locked it out immediately, and then sponsored the launch last week. But then decided I'll once we'd sort of done that, I thought, okay, let's see what Synergy is all about. And so decided to attend the Whitstable Daytime, and it was different. That's what I liked about it. It was a bit different.
It is very different to an ordinary event, and I think we was on the first table together with Synergy, for those of you who don't know, the concept is that you come along, there's some open networking, but then you get a number and you go to that table and you have 3 minutes to either tell them about your business, or there's some questions, sort of icebreakers to tell them about that. And that's where we got to meet. And that's where, David, I was blown away, because you are a super talented, and you define what an entrepreneur is in my eyes, because not only did you talk to me about, or talk to us about one business, there was also another business. And yeah, there's a lot going on. So I've got down that you've got Highway Business Solutions, you've got Atman UK Limited, you've got Kent Pat Testing, and you've got Chartham Holistic Kindergarten, and perhaps there's another one coming soon. So my question to you is, where did this all start? I mean, what was your first, what's your career path?
So honestly?
Honestly.
I didn't spend a great deal of time with my parents. I didn't really know that my parents that well at all. But there was a period where I lived with my mother, and she'd married this guy. Ironically, sure. So that's my surname's not actually mine. And this guy said to me when I was about 8 years old, he was doing a computer course, and he said to me that I couldn't touch the computer because I wasn't smart enough to use this computer. And it lit a fire in me. And I honestly, this has all been about proving him wrong.
I love that. And I love the fact that you're honest, because I think so many entrepreneurial journeys start with, if we reflect back, start with a pivotal point, and it could be a slightly challenging one like you had, or it could be something that's inspired you or done something like that. Okay, so there you are, the eight-year-old David who's going, right, I'm proving him wrong. Right, what happened next?
So I decided then I was going to study business studies and IT, so that's what I did. And then I worked at Pfizer for maybe 7 or 8 years in their IT division with my younger brother. We were very young. We were traveling first class all over the US. We just seemed to know a little bit more about than the what we call the grown-ups. We seemed to know a little bit more than they did about the computers. We're talking a long time ago.
Yeah, so how old was you then?
16 or 17.
So 16 or 17, I've got to ask, did your younger brother have the same experience with your stepdad as, like, was he told not to touch?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we just decided at that moment in time, you know, we grew up in a very sort of on a council estate, you know, and so we decided then we were going to take life head on. And I genuinely remember where I was standing when I said this to my brother Alan. I said to him, "That's it." I said, "But this is not going to be the way. We're not going to live like this. We're going to win."
Wow. And is he a very similar character to you, or was he like thinking, "Well, I'm just going to follow my older brother"?
It's really interesting. So Alan is 2 years, about 18 months younger than me, and considerably smarter. He really was the brains out of us. He did amazing things in the first part of his career and throughout his career and all of it. But he made a really interesting decision. When we all got made redundant from Pfizer a long time ago, he travelled to Brazil, and he then ended up racking up a huge debt, looking after children and running a school. And it changed him. And he come back, and he didn't Alan could have done anything. And worked at the very, very highest level. Still could. But he actually ended up, and still is to this day, a trampoline coach, a really good one at international level. But he doesn't do anything in technology or anything in that sort of business related whatsoever. He teaches children to trampoline, and he loves it.
He teaches children to trampoline. So, wow. But that's really nice, isn't it? That the fact that he found his own way, you know, because sometimes we can live in somebody's shadow and follow that path that maybe is not fit for us. So obviously I've got to ask you, can you trampoline?
God, no.
I'm bad enough on my own 2 feet, let alone bouncing up. So has he got a competitive side to him?
No, not so much. No, we're quite different. He's super smart, but very content. And has a very peaceful, happy, just doing what he's doing. He's not as motivated, you know, we pointed out my pin badge and my suit jacket earlier, but he's not so motivated by that sort of success or any of the rest. So we're quite different in that respect.
You're quite different by that. We'll bring the pin, because you mentioned the pin badge. I cut my teeth, networking and BNI and pin badges were really, really important. And they're that because it's a conversation starter. And that certainly caught my eye today, because obviously it's radio, so I should point out what pin badge you're wearing. It's a lovely gold pound sign, sterling pound sign, not the weight pound sign, because that would just be wrong. Although we were talking about weight.
But very apt.
So the sterling pound sign is lovely and gold, and David's got it on his lapel. And it is a conversation starter, because I said to you, that's caught my eye. Why are you wearing that? Obviously, as a businessman, it would be easy for me just to think, oh, you've done that, but actually there's a different reason. Go on, share that.
Yeah, no, it came as part of the suit check, but it's what drew my attention to it. And so I thought that looks as positive. It's yes. A positive reinforcement. And I thought I'd like to wear that and have that every day to keep striving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really love that. I really, for a business to have a visuals in front of you. I was speaking to some of my clients the other day and just saying, like, on my desk, I have visuals that inspire me and also remind me, I have a red flag on my desk in front of me. It's actually the flag of Montenegro, so it is mostly red, but I could just have a red flag just to remind me that if I'm taking a call or I'm with a prospect, if I get that nudge that perhaps this is not right that we work together, you don't have to work with everybody. We're not right for everybody, and yes, it's better to let them go, find the right person for them, et cetera. So yes, so we've done like coming to IT, working for Pfizer at 16 or 17, okay? So obviously IT was right for you. Brother's gone off to do trampolining and coaching, and you're at Pfizer. What happened next to you?
Got made redundant, like thousands of us did at Sandwich at the
That's
same
right,
time.
Yeah.
And what came into now what I call the real world. It was very much a bubble at Pfizer. We were honestly overpaid and underworked. That's the honest truth. For earning that sort of money at that age was great, but not the best lesson for coming into the real world. And then from that moment, worked in a variety of different IT companies, and then eventually realized that it wasn't, you know, working for others wasn't going to be the right way forward. So I didn't wake up, is what I call it, until I was about 30, when I realized actually that corporate dream that they sell you about, you know, work hard, get a good job and you work way up and you'll be absolutely fine. It wasn't for me. I felt very unfulfilled for a long time. So anyway, I started reading a lot of business books, which I'm obsessed with now, that I really, really understood the opportunity. I mean, okay, this is what I was looking for. This was the playing field I was looking for, because I am competitive. And I do see it as a game. I think, okay, now I know the rules and I know what it is. And it's opening. You can do what you want to do. You know, you can, you know, you're out there to express yourself how you need to. And choose yourself. It's the big lesson that I don't think I understood before 30, and I wish I had done. I wish I'd been taught that at school or learnt that from out of college. Choose yourself, you know, choose your own adventure.
Yes.
And I show my age now with the 90s books. But it was that was what it was for me. And I thought, okay, this now I'm comfortable. Now I know what I want to do and how I can do it. And, the rest has been history.
Yeah, so I'm sorry to ask you so many questions, but that's what we're here for. But like my face is lit up because the energy in this room, you bring an energy with you. You bring a positivity and energy. And I was definitely like, wow, here's somebody that's weird like me.
I definitely get
so excited talking about business, talking about how people have got where they were. And because you've touched on it here, our young people today, they need to hear these stories. They need to have this positive reinforcement that you can go and do this. Yes, it may be a different age. It may be a different time. But these stories go on through, you know, time immemorial, really. And I want to touch on that, if I may. So you were saying that you had some, you loved business books and stuff like that. So tell us a little bit about the business books. I mean, have you got any that you go, wow, that was the one that changed me? Or perhaps somebody that you're following that you go, that's the one that changed me?
They change all the time. But if I was going to tell anyone to read one business book and one business book alone, it would be The Go-Giver, without any shadow of a doubt. Have you read that book?
I've got that book. And I can see the cover, and yep, I can't remember who wrote it. So I'm not going to put you on the spot about that one. But what did you like? What did The Go-Giver give to you?
So the Go-Giver is a story about reciprocity. So the idea that people go into business and they think that they've got a hard sell, and they got that old sort of 1980s movies lines of always be closing, that sort of method, dog eat dog sort of mentality, yeah, where the Go-Giver tells you about this is a marathon, not a sprint. This is about building relationships over the long term, relationships that you might think that'll never turn into a business opportunity for you. They're never going to buy from you. But it's not about, and that's, it comes back to networking. So people often will go into the room and try and sell to the room. They look at who's in there and they say, oh, it's another multi-level marketing person, or it's this person, or they're only tiny, they're only one man. They're never going to work for it. And they're not understanding us. And this is what the Go-Giver is about, is building those relationships. You've got no idea who else they know, what their story is, where they've come from. And the Go-Giver is it's not like a traditional business book where it's the hard non-fiction. It's actually a piece of fiction telling you a story about that and explaining how building those long-term relationships, actually getting to know these human beings, and going and giving first, always lead with value, and ultimately you'll come out on top.
Yeah, I mean that absolutely is my ethos. As I said to you, I cut my teeth on BNI in a very, very big way. And so that was Giver's Gain.
Yeah.
And I believe that is a really good way of doing it. If you can do somebody good, actually, you've just reminded, I'm sitting here smiling because you said the word reciprocity. Okay. That is where I first read and learned about that word. And actually, I used that in as part of my business thing, and that's why I'm smiling, and I've got to get that book out again. This is the thing. I've got a stack of books like on the shelves everywhere, business books. Honestly, my husband says, do you really need another one? And my answer is, yes, I do, because there's always something that you can learn, that continual personal development that obviously you go, I knew we got on for a reason. I knew we got on. I knew I had to have you on. We'll just take a quick break and we'll be back.
Tired of IT headaches? Slow computers? Security worries? Lost files? Sound familiar? We've got your back. As Kent's leading IT support partner, we keep your business running smoothly, securely and stress-free. Call 0179-534-2362 now and get your IT sorted.
Welcome back, everybody. And at this point, I think it'd be really good to introduce Dr. Ross Friday. And I'm welcoming you here with David and myself. And it's lovely to have you here. And actually, it's our first time meeting. We've never met face to face, but I've heard so much about you.
Likewise, yeah. I was listening to you this morning. I was travelling in with Darren Bowman, who I think he says to say hi.
Oh, Darren. Hello, Darren. Oh, you better be listening, Darren, because I'm going to question you on this. Oh, my goodness. Well, we've mentioned BNI a couple of times this morning, and that's where I met Darren. So I'm assuming that you're a BNI member too.
Yes, I am. Yeah, a couple of years now, and stuff I think we're going to talk about today literally wouldn't have got started without networking. It turned it from being an idea that had been rattling around in my head for years to something that got off the ground entirely because of a conversation I had. And what you were saying about Giver's Gain and everything else, they didn't owe me anything and they helped me out with this. And it's now something that, as I say, only existed in my own head. Now it's a reality, and it's all because of those sort of shared connections and being able to help each other out, basically.
Absolutely. And I mean, I wouldn't be where I am now without BNI. When BNI, back in the day, most probably before you two were born, that's all there was in networking. You had Chamber, you had Federation of Small Businesses, which are absolutely fine. But I just started my business. At that time, I was a wedding and portrait photographer. And I had a choice. I could either find thousands and thousands of pounds to put a glossy magazine advert in, or I got a letter through my door and it said, come to BNI. And I didn't look back from that point. And that got me all around the world, on stage, speaking to people and meeting amazing people like Darren. And you most probably know Andy Gainsford, who used was on my team. And I always remember, Andy, we've got to get you on. I only thought about that this morning. I remember Andy Gainsford saying to me, Jill, Mia's his wife, Mia says to me, you're going to say yes anyway, so just do what Jill asks you. And, you know, what I loved about Andy and his ethos for BNI, he definitely totally understands the giver's game philosophy, and he totally goes out there to help people. So yeah, absolutely. So Ross, I know that you're a chartered psychologist, lecturer, writer, researcher. And I was saying to David as well, why I've brought the two of you together is because you've got so many strings to your bow. There's so many parts of you that you're not just one thing. And I thought this is an absolute ideal way of helping other people understand that you don't just have to do one thing. We've all got 24 hours in the day. Yeah. And I wish sometimes we wish you had more. But, you know, I'd love to find out how you've gone through this, becoming where you are now. What has really interested me, because that screams academia to me, but you've also got your own business, which I've not touched on in the introduction. And I'd like you, if you would, to share with us from your journey from academia into your business, which you represent BNI at. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's entirely accidental, really, but it's a great, you brought up BNI earlier, and it's a great example of how they can help. So my career's in academia. I'm a lecturer at three different universities, and that's effectively my day job. But I'd been thinking for a while, so I teach on the forensic psychology course for the criminology department, and as you would imagine, my job is to help students pass exams, get the grades that they need through good, solid coursework, and ideally, I suppose, help them go on to get a career. But that means that everything that I teach needs to be kind of grounded in stuff that's going to help them academically. I don't really get to talk about the most interesting conversations I've ever had, the most interesting people I've met. And as you can imagine, working in that area, there's quite a few of those. So I thought maybe if I was to hire a theatre for myself, I wouldn't be held back by the things that I have to do. I could do the best and most interesting show I thought I could produce. Maybe if I'm lucky, half a dozen people will come along. Maybe a dozen. I got a bit ambitious at one point. And maybe they'll enjoy it. I'll enjoy doing it. And it was more done as an opportunity for friends and family to see what I do, because of course they can't come on campus. They can't come to lectures. Yeah. And I can tell them about it, but it was just a chance to sort of show them what I do for a living, really. Just to almost like bring a friend to an office day type of thing. And I've been thinking about it.
Bring a friend to an office. I like that. Yeah. I get that analogy. Yeah.
I'd been thinking about it for a while, and I was on a BNI social, and I wasn't even in the room. My wife was just telling the story about how I'd had this idea and I needed to either forget about it or do it. And my fellow members kind of sat me down and said, look, if you want to do this, you do it. We'll make sure it's full the first time. We'll all come. We'll all bring people with us.
Yeah.
If it's cost that's holding you back, I'm sure we can sponsor it and make it happen the first time. We won't obviously be able to do it forever, but we can do it. It gives you a fair chance to see if it'll work, see if you enjoy doing it, and see if other people enjoy doing it. And for the longest time, that's why I say it's an accidental business, I did one, and when that went better than I thought and it sold out and people seemed to really like it and was full of questions at the end of it, I did another one thinking that will be the end of the road, and then did another one and another one and another one. And you can see where this is going. And now it's in several different venues in several different places. And it's kind of grown into this thing that I really need to give a little bit of strategy to, because so far my strategy is not extended far beyond between that one went well, I'll do another one.
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's good that you took that first step, and so often in business people don't take the next step, and this is what I really wanted to explore here today, really to encourage entrepreneurs or those thinking about being an entrepreneur. You have to take a step forward. You have to take maybe not a leap of faith, I'm not saying that, I mean there is faith involved, but when you have that, I really want to do that. And why I'm so keen about that is because in my entrepreneurial career, I've had lots and lots of ideas and lots of things. And then I'm going to say it, family, if you're listening, some of them have been stopped by saying, what are you doing that for, mum? For honestly, really? Yeah. And I haven't done it. And then I've looked back and I've gone, if only. So family warning out here now, when your mother thinks of something, she's going to do it. Five entrepreneurs I've got, five entrepreneurs. So we've got a really good entrepreneurial referral group going on, taught by BNI, I must say. You can't, if you know the BNI referral way, you'll never, it's in your blood. You can't stop doing it. So, okay. So we're at a stage where, oh, I've got one question. Did you, growing up, was what made you go into this field? Or did you always like think that's what I want to do? Did you always set out to be a lecturer? Did you set out to be a, in this field? What prompted that?
Far from it. Despite going to a grammar school where nearly everybody went to university, I didn't want to. My dad was a builder that had a reasonable amount of success running his own company. And I wouldn't say he was anti university, but he was very much don't do it for the sake of it. Only do it if you want to go into a career that requires you to do it rather than doing it for its own sake. And I just went out and I just started working. It was never on my radar. My dad was a prison officer, so I've always had interest in the justice system and how that's not quite as simple as people think it is. And it's a lot more interesting than people think. I've also always been interested in both sides of the story. He would often come home and talk about inmates that weren't the stereotypical person you thought they would be. They were all much deeper and much more complicated. They've all got their own stories to tell. So I've always had an interest in it. But if it wasn't for the recession, I don't think I'd have ever gone down this path. I used to work for the Kent Messenger.
Okay.
And things were going very well there. I saw that my whole career would be there and I would probably grow with it. And then when the recession happened and they had a round of redundancies, and then we all know what's happened with traditional print media, I was sort of forced to do something different. And I thought I would go to university to almost ride out the storm. I might as well be trying to gain something whilst the job market was so bad that there wasn't many opportunities there. And strangely, I went there looking for an animation course.
Right.
If I've got one God-given talent, it's probably drawing.
Right.
And it was only really, again, something I couldn't really have that stopped me doing it. When I looked into it, that era of hand-drawn cell animation was coming to an end. So I decided there was no point in trying to qualify for something that just was coming to a natural conclusion anyway. And there was one guy, like you were talking about connections earlier, there was one guy at the open day that was sitting there looking a bit bored. So we got talking. And it was probably 10 minutes before I realised that he was a psychology lecturer there, and we realised how much we had in common. And then you just never know who you're going to meet. That person ended up being the person who I started all of my initial research projects with. So even as an undergraduate student, I was involved with all the research projects that was going on with the university, thanks to David. And he eventually ended up being my PhD supervisor. Been to so many conferences together. And even with these shows, he made the introduction that got me into the London venue that I'm performing at. So that one chance meeting where I went there for something completely different, being a bit open-minded and being prepared to say yes instead of no, has led to so many things that I'd never even considered. It's just amazing that if you keep an open mind where these things can lead.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to say that we will come on to talk about the shows, because the shows are all about murder, and we'll go into that in a bit more detail. So I wanted to lay the groundwork here for both of your backgrounds, because they're very much like, it's not about, yes, it is about being in the right place at the right time, but you need to understand the opportunities that are in front of you and think about them and take that opportunity, take that first step forward. So, and you know, it would be great to see where this goes, because I am absolutely buzzing. So David, back to you. So we've got to the stage where you are now thinking you're IT. Okay. So, and I know you've got an IT company, and I'd love you to talk to us about that, but where has this gone? You're there, you're obviously interested in business, you've learnt about business books, we're all sitting here, we're all entrepreneurs, okay? Where did this take you next?
Is it actually starting starting the business?
Starting a business. So you've been employed and now you've gone, I think there's something else out there for me. This is a big step, becoming self-employed.
Yeah. It was twofold. So before I joined my last role at employment, I'd done a period where I'd been consulting. I ran a startup with Paul Andrews, actually.
I didn't know that. So yeah. Paul's here and this is his radio network here.
So, I ran a business with Paul. It was a startup in the software space, in the marketing in the space. I'd published a few books. Paul actually wrote the foreword to my first book. And then I'd gone back into employment for a while. And I'd realised I got a bit of a taste for it. But also, the honest look, I had a bad boss. And it was just a trigger. It was the way he used to treat people, the way he used to talk to people. But also, I used to do a lot of the, we used to call them lunch and learns. So we used to do a lot of workshops where I would just teach people, whether it was about technology, compliance, digital marketing, whatever it was. And we could fill a room week after week. and I'd absolutely love talking to these people. I'd been fortunate enough to be public speaking for that sort of for years before that. I've been again fortunate to, you know, in the US, Germany, all over the UK, at some of the biggest marketing conferences in the UK. I managed to, you know, got to speak at some of those events, and I knew I really enjoyed that. But what I was doing was I was filling the room with small businesses, and doing the research, I was realizing that actually Kent is 99% small businesses, actually less than 10 people, on average. I was thinking, actually, so this is predominantly, there are literally tens of thousands of businesses in Kent that are all actually micro businesses. They're all sort of, you know, 10 or less than five people.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, so the company I was working for were brilliant technically, but they weren't set up for small businesses, for much for large businesses. I thought, this is an opportunity. I can fill a room all day long with small businesses, and I can earn their trust by actually delivering value to them and teaching them about all of these fundamental skills that are evolving constantly, whether it's technology or digital or IT. It was evolving at such a rate that there was a constant need for this education, and a small business owner struggling to keep up to date with the rates of change.
Yeah.
So I was building these relationships with these small companies that actually could never convert because the business wasn't set up to handle small businesses. So it just became obvious to me that I can set up my own small business doing this that's dedicated to providing technology services and becoming that technology partner to small businesses, priced at a point that was going to make sense to them, you know, and taking away the hurdles like long-term contracts and things to these. But let me take away all the things I know that stop a small business working with a technology partner, price it right, make sure it's not a long-term contract. We do 30-day rolling contracts, you know, deliver value, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I think it's taken away, when I met you at networking, it was taking away that fear of, for the small business person, where all of a sudden they're really good at what they do, they know how to deliver that, and then, oh my God, I've got to have insurance, I've got to have IT, I've got to have this, I've got to have that, and the costs start building up, and the strain of having those monthly costs building and building, but knowing they've got to have that backup. So very, very cleverly. See, it was what I loved. One of our sons calls it a burning hair problem. If you've got a burning hair problem, how do you put that out quickly before it hurts? Yeah, and that's what you've done. So, are you happy to share that offer?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that would be lovely to hear that.
Yeah, so we launched something this year on the basis of how artificial intelligence is going to disrupt so many businesses, all businesses, and all industries at some point. Whether it's artificial intelligence initially going into robotics, but we are, I can't explain clearly enough how different the world is going to be business-wise in the next 5 years. You know, I could try, but I'm still doing it a disservice. It's going to be 10 times worse than we could possibly imagine. So I knew that my information technology was going to be impacted hugely. So what I decided to do was embrace it. We spent the last couple of years qualifying, making sure we're certified to understand artificial intelligence at a great level so that I can teach small businesses. But we've launched a free IT support plan for micro and small businesses, anything up to sort of, 20, 30 users. But even as, if you've just got one computer, it doesn't matter. With the idea that we offer a free service where they can use an AI service where they can ask it any technology question of any kind, and it were in plain English. And it will then give you the answer how to resolve it step by step in plain English. And then realised that wasn't quite going to be enough because there's ChatGPT, there's Google Gemini, everyone's got access to them. Now, our one is designed specifically for IT support, but they could still get it. So we've offered things like free backup. We're doing, so if you've got a laptop or a desktop, we offer a free cloud-based backup. We offer free website hosting. We offer free training on all the things that you mentioned earlier that, that scare a small business. So things like GDPR, every small business, doesn't matter how big or small you are, you have to be GDPR compliant. We offer the training to do that. And every member of staff, including just one, has to have that training. Cybersecurity training and how to get the best out of AI training as well. All of that is completely free, as well as some other things, some software bits and bits. We bundled it all up into a free package and we're adding to it all the time with the idea of people, they don't, people don't know me necessarily and they don't know our business. You know, we're based in Deal. We're a team of nine. We've been around for 7 years, but they don't know us necessarily. In order to trust us, we're offering that free value first, that leading with that value, like we said earlier. Try us, okay? And give us a try, because all of these things are free. Yes, you can still access our support desk on a pay-as-you-go basis if you need to, and it's really easy to do that, with the idea that if they can trust us and get, and we can become that technology partner and add value, some of them may, like, they might need a laptop or a desktop in the future, and they might need new Wi-Fi, might need a new voice over IP telephone system. And we offer all of those services and cybersecurity and our paid IT packages as well, which start as little as £10 per user per month on a 30-day contract. So we're just introducing our business to them so they can try us out for free at no risk whatsoever, and let us build that trust to them that we can be that trusted technology partner on the basis. Some people might never buy anything from us, and that's totally okay.
They'll only speak
good of us, hopefully, to other people. And some of those people will eventually purchase other services.
And I think that's what really struck me when you was explaining that, was like, wow, there's so many people that I could tell that about. And, you know, it was disruptive, as in the fact that you're disrupting the market from, you know, but as a business owner, speaking to business owners day in, day out, they want people that they can trust. And we're here because, you know, from networking conversations and connections, and that's absolutely fine. But there's so many business owners out there at the moment that are not taking that first step into networking. And we'd really encourage you to do that, because it's not as bad as what you think. There's something out there for everybody. There really is. However, this is what we want here too. We want to help other people know what this is about. So, David, could you share how, if anybody's interested in this, what's the best way for them to have a look at this particular service? Because I know you've got other businesses as well, but I want to concentrate on this one just now.
No, absolutely. So going to the website is the easiest place. It's www.hibits.co.uk. That's HIBITS.co.uk.
And the name of the business is Highway Business Services. So, yeah, take a look at that, because I really do think that you might have an IT provider fine at the moment, but you've just listed lots and lots of things. So we're here also to encourage those first-time entrepreneurs to get out there. And this stops a lot of people taking that first step. It's just overwhelming. They're really good at what they do, and they know there's a market for their product, but it's like, oh my goodness, it gets down to cash flow and what do you need? So, I mean, that's absolutely fantastic. I was blown away by that. And we will get on to the other businesses as well. Something that you both said you are now in the place of, like, or have been in the place of filling a room. Okay. Which is really interesting. So Ross, I know that, as a lecturer, yeah, you would hope your students turn up. You would hope they would be engaged. But you took that first step of, I loved that, where you said, hopefully my friends and friends and family will come and have a look. And now you're going on. Can you tell us, and you just dropped in there, right, as well as that, and my London show. Yeah, and my London show. So from doing what you're doing, could you explain to us and our listeners a little bit about your shows, what that entails? I'd love to know how they grew and the theatre sizes, etc. But, you know, what you get from this, because it's obviously a passion that you are really enjoying, because I can see the smile on your face when you took it. So take us back. Start with the shows. Tell us a little bit about those.
The shows are really, for the first time in a long time, it feels like the timing's good. And that's luck, really. Netflix and all those sort of streaming services are absolutely exploding with true crime documentaries. So it just feels like I'm perfectly positioned at just the right time to make the most of this. And I would love to take the credit for that, but that's just that's just not the case. You can even see it at the universities. The interest in studying forensic psychology and criminology has gone through the roof. That's one of the toughest parts of being a job as a lecturer is the students come in and they think it's like in the movies. And of course, it's not like in the movies. It's not quite as exciting as that. And they oversimplify things for the sake of telling a story, which is fine. That's their job. They're trying to entertain. But as they realize that it's a lot more about statistics and numbers and research than they make it look like in the films, that's always a tough part. But I think then you re-engage them and they actually become more fascinated in it because it's more interest if it's not simple, right? There's lots to learn. So keeping them engaged, like you rightly said, they need to turn up. They've got courses to pass and exams to get through and things. So hopefully we make it fascinating and interesting for them. But that's where the theatre was a completely different story. Nobody has to be there. And constantly haunted by the image of playing to an empty theatre or two people sitting in the front row slow clapping me at the end of a show.
Can only imagine.
But fortunately, so far, that's not happened. Every single one's sold out. And it's kind of just created a different paranoia because I think most people, when they start something like that, it builds slowly. And they're not scared of half-empty theatres, but are sort of getting paranoid about a show not being as successful as the last one. And what does it mean if that happens? But and that's something I've got to face with trying these new venues now, because you asked where it started, and we all need a leg up. I'm going to give a shout-out to the Avenue Theatre in Sittingbourne.
Yeah, great.
It's a great place to try these ideas. It doesn't matter if you're a dancer, performer, got an idea for a talk, you've got an idea for a play. It's 100 seats, which is just enough for it to feel like a proper theatre and a proper night out. And they're proper theatre seats, curtains, stage, lighting technician, sound technician, everything that you could want. But it's like it's been minimised to a manageable size so that you can try these ideas out. And I've done, I think it's 16 shows there. And it took me that long to realise that I might have something that people were going to keep coming back to. Imposter syndrome gets mentioned a lot with me. But the way it's working, so far, I haven't advertised at all. So most people are coming along. They're normally dragged by one partner who thinks it sounds great. The other partner, it's just easier to go along than argue about it. They end up enjoying it far more than they thought they was going to. And then they'll come to the next show, because that's the other thing that's changed. There was just one original show called Getting Away with Murder, and people said, we'd like to know what happens next. Now we know what makes a serial killer. What are the life experiences? What's the psychology and the neurology behind what makes somebody do those sort of awful things? They wanted to know what happens next, which is, of course, how do they get caught? Or if they don't get caught, why do they get caught? So that turned into a show called Killer Mistakes. And that didn't really finish the story, because they wanted to know what happens once they get incarcerated or they're facing death row. What happens to the brain when somebody's having to deal with that kind of change to their life? Obviously, they were driven to do something that they couldn't stop themselves doing, and now they can't do it anymore. What does that mean for people? What's the end of the story? So that led to a show called Behind the Prison Gates. So there's now three shows, and I'm finding that I'm recognizing faces. They're coming back to see another one, which is a huge compliment. But importantly, they're bringing people with them that weren't, didn't come interested the first time. So, yeah, it's naturally growing, and it's naturally snowballing and gaining a bit of momentum, which is great. And some people are coming and seeing the same show that they've already seen again, because it's so interactive that if the audience asks different questions, that takes us down a different rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So even though the theme will always be the same, people have watched the same show again and taken something completely different.
Yeah, or gone along with something, you know, somebody else, which is the great referral process. We've got a in Herne Bay, we've got an amazing little, well, it is called the Little Theatre, and it's 72 seats, and it is absolutely wonderful. And seen so many different things there. These little theatres are the lifeblood of communities. And as you say, it's actually the way people start, isn't it? It's you know, if you think of musicians, if you think of all of that, that's how it starts. So I love the fact that you've got those three shows. You know, I'm hands up here. I watch a lot of this type of program. There's so much, and I was listening to some research the other day about. The following from women for this, and about obviously you're the psychologist, but I'm just telling you what I think. It's like there's a part of I discussed this with my daughters and my granddaughters. There's a part of you that sort of wants to be prepared. It's almost like that fear factor. There's, you know, I've been mugged, and there was definite, and I've had burglaries and all sorts of things. And there's definitely that part of me, if I'd have known more, that wouldn't have happened. Yeah. So I can see where that comes from. So I know, because I've had a look, that you've got a number of venues now, and a lot of your shows are already sold out. So you've got from Sittingbourne, but you've also got some other venues. I mean, you've said London. Bromley? I can't remember the venue in London. What's the venue in London?
It's at the Arches at London Bridge.
Isn't there some other spooky place near London Bridge as well? Isn't that where the what's the music? Not the museum. There's a show there, isn't there? What's it? London Dungeon.
Oh yeah, yeah. It'd be a hugely atmospheric place to do it.
Dungeon.
And you say about these smaller theatres as well. The other one that's on the list there is the Tom Thumb Theatre in Margate, which is this little independently run place.
I was thinking
place.
Of that one when you were talking. That's the one I grew up in the area. So that's the theatre.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
So I'm doing that one in May, and it's this comparatively small but really intimate and atmospheric place. I'm really looking forward to doing it there. And when they're independently run, it's got a bit of a different feel. Everybody wants it to succeed, including the theatre owner.
Absolutely.
So it's been really fun trying to get that one together. And I think we both thought it's the first one where I've worked beyond where I have my networking friends to help me do it. And again, it's gone really well. In fact, I don't think I'm overclaiming to say it's their fastest selling show. I think they released it, and 4 days later it was sold out. So the thing seems to be gathering momentum. And it's interesting that you mentioned about you want to be prepared. Most of my psychology classes are about 90% female. I would say the audiences that come to the shows, it's female led. If you looked at the audience, it's probably 50-50, but there's a lot of husbands dragged in some cases, literally by their true crime loving wives.
And, true crime loving wives. That's the name of a book, isn't it?
Or maybe a lunchtime TV talk show.
Absolutely.
But of course, you're unfortunately, as you're probably already aware, statistically far more likely to be the victim of something like that. So I do wonder if there's something to what you're saying. Do you want to understand it better? Because there would be a reason for that. But what's different about the shows and what you might see on Netflix is, I think, two things. I think people assume it's going to be quite gratuitous, and there's going to be horrible crime scene images and stuff that you can't unsee. Of course, you can't talk about this sort of stuff without showing some crime scenes and talking about for some fairly nasty situations. But we really try and get into the psychology of it and try and get into the understanding of it. So rather than sort of glorifying the violence, it's very much, why are we interested in these things? How we can understand it? What leads to these things? What's really unique about the shows is that I try and get the audience data before the show happens. So if you book for a show, you get an email, take part in a couple of surveys, you can ask questions, you can answer a few of my questions. So during the show, when I'm comparing the general population to a prison population, for example, I've also got the answers from the people in that room. So when we look at the charts and graphs and the stats, so for instance, with the original show, everybody that comes along takes a psychopath test before the show even happens. So when I'm talking about the psychopath scores of the average population, we can also compare the psychopath scores of the people in the room at that time, which gives it a very different feeling. And it gives people a sense of, am I high or low? They kind of know where they are.
I'm doubly smiling because I also, it seems like I watch a lot of television, but, you know, that's my chill time. I've been watching Secret Genius on the television, and again at the end of that show they say to them, two people in this room are going to find out at the end that they have got the IQ score of, you know, the top 5%. So do you at the end of the show say some husband tonight is going to find out that their wife is a psychopath? Because you know, Wayne, if you're listening, you are coming to this show with me. So whether you want to or not, you're coming. He'll be one of those that drags. He's like, what are you watching this for? Surely it makes you feel worse. It doesn't. I feel more knowledgeable about certain things. And I think, yeah, and I'm interested in it. It's an interesting thing. Do your students come along?
Yeah, and they rarely tell me when they're going to. They like doing the hi, sir thing in the foyer, which is always a bit of a shock because I think I'm a different me at the theatre to what I am in the lecture theatre. There's a lot of dark humour in it, and it's important to state that we never make light of any of the situations.
Of course,
there's a lot of respect for the victims, but that doesn't mean that ridiculously stupid things don't happen in crime scene investigations or killers make mistakes that we can barely believe. So there is a lot of dark humour in it. And that's one of my favourite things about the show is at the start of the show, at the start of each of them, I explain that that's human nature, that if you're going to deal with dark subject, challenging matters, one of the ways we deal with it is through humour, and that's okay. And as the show goes on, you can see sometimes when something's funny, they're almost looking to their family members or their partner for permission to laugh.
To laugh, yeah.
And by the time we get into the second half, everybody's relaxed with that and has realised that it's fine to find things funny, even if they're about something awful.
Yeah.
So, as a psychologist, I'm a big advocate for the use of humour to kind of cope with things that would otherwise be difficult, but it takes people a little while to settle into that lane.
Yeah. I don't know about you, David, but like, I've just realised that me and you are sitting in the room with a psychologist.
Absolutely.
So this is.
And we're both weird.
I just said, oh, yeah, you're just weird like me. Yeah. This is really interesting. So we've come on a journey so far. We've come from where you started and what you're doing, and that it's gone in very different ways. And it come back to you, David, because like you've done the IT thing, okay, but I know down here that we've got another three businesses and perhaps another one on
one
the way.
One of them's actually the same, so it is. Right. There's another two.
Okay, so another two. So you've set up. You've gone down the IT route. You're reading all these books. Which I absolutely love because I'm a firm advocate of continual personal development. I mean, I've just finished my, for those of you who don't know me and can't see me, I'm really old and I only just passed my degree last year. So, I did that. And I'm really, really proud I did that. But I'm going on to learn other things. So you was doing the IT, okay. When did it come to you that you've gone, okay, did you get bored and think I want to do something else, or did you see the opportunity? How did it present itself with you?
So the truth is there's an abundance of opportunity out there, and it's about being open to receiving those opportunities and to listening to those opportunities. So in this particular instance, the business was a client of mine, and the owner didn't have anyone to pass the business down to. And was at a point in his life where he didn't want the responsibility any longer, and didn't want to lose the team. He could have sold it to a much larger company, had lots of very good offers to do so. But it would have meant effectively they'd just taken the client base, lost the staff, you know, lost the premises, and it would have just, you know, it had disappeared. He wanted to retain the staff, the team, keep all their jobs intact. There was about 20 in total, and wanted to just keep it going. So he was looking for somebody to take it on, and approached me and said, "I like the way you do business. I like the way you communicate, and I like the way you present yourself." He said, "Would you be interested?" So it took probably a year of discussions initially, just to get it in place and understand it, because it wasn't an industry that I'm familiar with at all.
What industry is it?
So initially, when I bought the business, it was just a PAT testing company, so portable appliance testing. Nothing particularly exciting, but they're probably one of Kent's, if not the largest in Kent. So we deal with Margaret Hospital over at Kiri QM. We've got Ashford Hospital, Canterbury Hospital, Kent Fire Brigade, and about 1,600.
So large clients, large contracts.
Absolutely. You know, and the University of Kent. And we've got people permanently on those sites all year round. And about 1,600.
Just imagine, that's a lot of plugs.
Absolutely, it is. And about 1,600 other local businesses around. So at Man were quite synonymous with sort of PAT testing, you know, quite a large one. There's lots of other really good other smaller ones. In actual fact, in my chapter in BNI, we've got an excellent PAT tester in Jason Cairns. He's a great PAT tester, and I'd love if he was part of my business, but he's got his own fantastic business.
I didn't realise you was a member of BNI.
Canterbury, yes.
Oh, Very interesting.
Absolutely. And in fact, I'm driving Andy Gainsford's old car in the car park. I bought it a year or so ago.
I hope it's got all the right camera equipment in it and all of that.
Oh, it is. It's a hugely oversized Mercedes and it's got all the gadgets and everything. Of course it has.
Well, no, you see, this is what I'm saying. I said to you before we come on air, David, didn't I? I said, I'd like to bring people together. I have no idea where there's, Linda, like this one, where there's going to be synergy. Okay. But I didn't know that. I knew that you was a BNI member, Ross. I did not know you was a BNI member. And then Andy's come up quite a few times. Andy, it's okay. I'm not going to tell any stories just yet.
But so the I took the business on, and but what I saw was, okay, so we've got 1,600 clients that are pat testing. There's a trust relationship with them that for many years we've been going in and out, going and doing this pat testing. The opportunity for me was, well, there's lots of other testing. There's what we call the 5-year electrical testing. We call it EICR. There's emergency lighting testing. There's general electric work. So initially, took on a local electrician, brought his business into it, and started offering electrical services and offering those additional tests. Now, for our clients, it was a no brainer. It was you know, we're doing our PAT testing. Why not also do the electrical test, the emergency lighting test?
They trust you. They like the way you're working.
The trust was there.
Yeah.
So then we then brought in another guy who's doing fire alarms, fire extinguishers, intruder alarms, CCTV, and that's brought the suite of product, you know, of those together. We may add other things going forward, but we've got the client base was there, the trust was there. It was a good, solid, established brand. Introduced these new services, and we've doubled the turnover in a year.
Wow, wow, and kept that business going and those employees.
Yeah, we've got a much larger team now. We've got a full, you know, more administrative staff. You know, so we've employed, you know, more people over that period. We're still employing more people, it just continues to keep growing.
And that's nice for the business owner, because there are so many people when they want to, either sell their business or retire. It's their baby. They want that to go on with the right look after their staff. And that's a really that's a really good thing about networking and building those strong relationships that you was talking about earlier. It is those relationships. It's not about. You know, I always talk to people about networking and say, you know, you're not selling to the room. You're there to make relationships and build that trust and get to know people. Because when, you know, like listening to both of you and starting to know a little bit more about you, then it's so much easier to refer when the opportunity comes up. If you just listen and hopefully ask some interesting questions about that person and why they're doing things. I think that's it, because you don't... Sometimes you don't actually even understand the business, but if you know the ethos, if you understand the person and you trust them, that's a much easier way. You know, for example, you know, the old one is, isn't it? Like if you was going to somebody moved into the area and said, oh, what's the, I see this on the local Facebook groups all the time. What's the best Indian restaurant? Who's the best person to do this? Who knows a trusted builder? They want, that word trust comes in time and time again.
And it's funny how I'm sure actually you might be able to help with this one, because there must be, I know there is, there's some sort of psychological thing where people will trust a stranger's opinion over a company themselves, the direct, but they'll still trust a stranger who might recommend something. And I don't know why, but we do, it's true.
Yeah. Got any thoughts on that, Ross?
Yeah, I think as soon as someone's motivated to tell you a certain thing, we instinctively doubt it, which is, it's us being perfectly sensible, I think. If somebody's got, sorry to tie everything back to murder, but if someone's got a motive.
No,
if someone's got motive to tell you something, if they're in the game, then of course you're going to think, well, what are they trying to get out of it? Are they trying to drive business their own way? Are they trying to drive it away from somebody else? But as you say, when it's a stranger that appears to have nothing to gain, and I'm picking up on your point about what you say about trusting a person, there was a particular person in my BNI group that came to mind. I, despite trying to, don't entirely understand her business, but I would absolutely recommend her to anybody, despite not really understanding the business, because I have no doubt whatsoever that she would do her absolute best job for somebody. So, I think I probably refer on the person stronger than my understanding of the business or how well things link together. It's, as you said earlier, it's all about the trust.
It is so about the trust. And I think to build that trust, it is about meeting with people regularly, taking the time to get to know them. I always say to people, you know, when you whatever networking you do, it's not just about the hour or the 2 hours that you're in that room with those other people. You can't get to know somebody then. It's about taking the time with the right people, even if, you know, they're not, you're not selling to the room. So it's just about getting to know them. How can you help that person? How can you put them in contact with that person? And, you know, I was only recounting this story the other day when I joined BNI. Was actually Andy and I were in the same chapter when I joined. We was at Brands Hatch, there was a gentleman in the room when I first joined, and every week he would stand, because BNI is a weekly event, so every week he would stand up and ask for an introduction into that same person and the same company. And I was cutting my teeth in BNI at that time, and I was like, right, so what do I need to do? Oh, I know, I will ring this person. And so I did, and he was actually somebody in Kent County Council. And I rung him, and I got through to the secretary, and I was like, oh, you've just got to let me speak to this gentleman. And she was like, yeah, but what do you want? I said, I'm asking a favour for a friend. I said, but, you know, please, please. And she let me through, and I spoke to this guy, and he must have thought I was mad, because I was like, look, there's this man I know. His name's Trevor, and he really wants to speak to you, and he's been asking every week, please do me a favour. I said, because I hear your name all the time. Would you just have a conversation with him? And actually, he just laughed, right? And he just laughed, and he was like, go on then, go on then. And so Trevor got the appointment to have that. He was a printer. And he didn't get that particular job, but he got some other work. And the joy of making that connection was, you know, was just great, because it was like, I didn't know what he really wanted, but I knew I trusted him. And I think there'll be stories like that that go on and on and on. And your customers, a bit like what you're saying, Ross, it's the people that have come to see the show that are your best referrers. You said you didn't have to advertise. It's just literally been that word of mouth that's growing and growing and growing.
They'll talk about it, won't they, immediately after. So talk to their friends and their family about what a wonderful show it was, and that's the best form of marketing, really, isn't it?
Yeah. How do you cope, Ross, with, I was going to say adoration, that was the word that came to head, but these people are coming back time and time again. You know, considering where you started with thinking, I can only get like 10 people in a room, and now you're selling out your shows. How do you cope with that? Is that something that comes naturally to you, or does that, you know, is it awkward?
I've had a couple of incidences where it was a little bit awkward, and I was looking to my wife to help me out, and she was just standing in the corner laughing because she could see me squirming. But it's generally speaking, the way the shows are at the moment, and I hope it doesn't change, but you know, normally you'd go to a show and whoever's performing, you wouldn't see them before, during or after. They would be backstage in the green room or something. Whereas because of how this started off, that doing that was weird. Like, okay, the first show, I knew everybody in the audience. They were there to support me, and it was just this little experiment. So to behave like that just seemed odd. So I would be at the bar with everybody else until they called time, and like the siren goes off to say the show started in 5 minutes, and I'd sort of scuttle off and appear on stage afterwards, which looking back now seems kind of strange. But then to suddenly stop doing that seems stranger. So I still do. So at the moment, and I don't know if it will change when I go to these other venues, because as it is at the moment, I hired a theatre, and within reason, they're happy with whatever I do because I've hired it, so it's my choice. But now theatres are starting to come to me. They've got their own rules and regulations, and I'm starting to get told how long this show's got to be, and that one's got to be trimmed by 20 minutes, or can you make it 3 hours for this one? So it's starting to become more of a collaboration than it used to be. But so far, I've sort of been there when people arrived. I'll be having a drink with everybody else in the break, and then afterwards, if there's time and the bar will open again, we'll have another drink afterwards. And it's been like this strange social affair where I'll be on stage and then I'm not, and then I'm sort of hanging out with everybody else. And it hasn't changed. The moment I realised it might have changed a bit was when I was talking to this group, and a couple of them were getting quite tongue-tied. And I sort of recognised it from when I've met stars before and wasn't quite sure how I don't waste their time or I ask a sensible question. And I was like, they can't possibly be feeling that way about me. And my wife's in the background just with this huge smile on her face, just nodding like, yes, they are.
Yes, because she's seeing it. And I was going to go on to say, you know, it's like the first time somebody comes up and asks for your autograph or for example, like you were saying about writing a book. And like when you do your, you know, when you write your book, you get a bestseller and then people are going, oh yeah, I know you. And it's that, I suppose it's that time when you're thinking, which is happening now to you, these other venues coming on board, it's thinking that through and seeing how you're going to handle that. But your wife's already seeing it. And obviously she knows you very well and knows what you'll feel comfortable with. We can't keep calling her your wife. What's her first name?
Sandra, yeah.
Sandra.
She was very much enjoying how comfortable I wasn't feeling. She found
Sandra,
it very funny.
Sandra, I'd love to meet you.
You'd like her.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think it's all to do with how people know you. So anybody that knew me already, I think I could be doing the O2 and they wouldn't care any more about my opinion then than they would do now. Things just wouldn't change. But I think if the only way they've ever seen you is maybe on stage and they haven't met you in any other capacity, then they think differently. If you've written a book and you've only met somebody, David, that's read your book and they haven't met you in any other way, to them, you're probably this big authority figure that they don't know what to say, what's a sensible question, they don't
exactly
want to waste your time.
Speaking on stage, so I'd come off stage after speaking for an hour, and at the larger events, you can't see past the first row.
Yeah.
It's dark, and you can't see. So there could be 500, 600 people, 1,000 people, and you've got no idea who's there. You will only see the faces in the first row. And so you've got no idea. But then I would, after the talk, either be other speakers or there'll be, you know, breakout areas, whatever, I'll be walking through the corridors and people would come up and start talking to you like they knew you. And it would be strange to say, it was such a different interaction to a complete stranger when you're at networking, you introduce yourself to somebody and so on. But when it's, they would talk like they knew you because they'd obviously been listening to you for the last hour. And I used to do a lot of it. So I understand that premise. And it's rather bizarre. It took me off guard at first. It was like, hold on, do I know you? Because you know my name and you seem to know me, but I've got no, and they almost forget that you don't know them.
And of course, now with social media, people are wanting or asking, Can I do a selfie? Can I do, you know, this sort of, they want that for their social media. And it's a really interesting concept. I know, I don't know whether you've seen this on television, but the stalker thing where Brad Burton, who ran 4A Networking, and she's just been convicted on many counts, but that sort of that having a selfie turned into something completely different. And it was like, I've always done this. This is, you know, you come off stage, this was his brand. You come off stage, you know, people are there to have a selfie or ask a question or have, you know, photo. And it's that awkwardness. He said, like, you have to learn to get used to it. And I'm sure that when you're going to the bigger venues, that's also a nice thing where you have maybe something that's a little bit more orchestrated, but maybe for your small venues, which I'm sure you're always going to love, those small intimate venues for something like you do is going to be very, very impactful, as well as the big ones. It's like anybody starts off, isn't it?
Oh, for transparency, I've turned up to events and there's been one person turned up.
Yeah.
Like, real story, genuinely. You don't know. You just never know. Like you're saying, the anxiety at the beginning, you know, who is anyone going to show? You know, that's happened multiple times. You put an event on and there is a leap of faith, like you said earlier, you know, at that point. But that's okay too. In actual fact, sometimes they can be just as good as the really, really large ones. Get much more intimate. You just have a chat at that point.
Yeah, having a chat, having a discussion, and giving value, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Do you know what? I really learned something from a recent show that I went to. It's over the road from where I work at Greenwich University. They've just got a theatre over there, Greenwich Theatre. And I went to see a show there. And because of my own paranoia about how I would feel if like half the front row was full up, I wasted the show feeling terrible for this poor performer on stage because there was hardly anybody there in a theatre that I think seats 400. There was maybe 20 people there. Mm. But she came out, she gave it a roar, and she didn't act any differently to if it had been a packed audience. She bowed at the end, thanked everyone for coming, said what a good time she had, and that she'll be in the foyer if anybody has any questions.
Love it.
And I didn't think, oh, that must have been him. I was just impressed.
Yeah.
And that was it. And I thought I could learn a lot from that, because I think people will think as much of you if you give it your all to half a dozen people or a packed out audience. I think as long as you're doing your best and not.
Yeah, you're delivering. If you've got that one person there, they've paid their ticket price and they've come to see you. They deserve your best. And that's mindset, isn't it? And I think that's good for all of us. I think, you know, if we bring that back to networking, some networking, you will stand up and do a 1 minute presentation, some a three, some you might do a 10. You know, there's all different types. You just give it your best. I think when we go back to networking and talking about yourself, whether you're sitting down around a table, opening questions, I think it is about giving your best. And I think it really reflects on you, on your integrity and your how people perceive you. You never know who is around that table. And I see this is one of the challenges I see with some business owners where they go and they've almost like, oh, well, you was mentioned it earlier, David, where, oh, but I'm sitting with that person, they're never going to refer me, or that's not my ideal client, right? This one really grates on me. No, it doesn't matter. It's who they know.
Absolutely.
It's who they know. Who are our connections? Look, we've only just all met. We don't know who our connections are. We don't know who we could introduce to each other. That's something as we get to know each other more and find out what, and we're going to explore that in a minute about what is a good referral for you guys. But I think that's so important, and having that genuine interest in human beings. I think that's what networking should really be about, and connections will come naturally. I understand that there's some businesses out there that can feel a little bit desperate sometimes and like, I need to get the money in. But if you just relax back into it, show your personality, show yourself, people will come and help you. I must tell you my BNI story because it's quite phenomenal. I was doing BNI, etc. And I ended up very fortunately looking after Kent Essex, sorry. And thousands of members, which was absolutely great. And then one day, I started not to feel quite as energetic as I should, and it led to burnout. And one day, I was driving myself to the hospital, and within an hour, I'd become no feeling from tummy down. The person that came into the hospital to support me was that lady who sent me the first letter to invite me along, Joanna Bold. She's still a BNI member. She's one of the best amount of givers for thank you for the business, along with Richard. And she was there. But so I went on to unfortunately come out of there 6 weeks later in a wheelchair and told you're not going to walk again. And I lost my business. I lost everything because my insurance wouldn't pay out because it was too rare an illness. However, BNI, someone somewhere in BNI or a group of people come to the rescue. They put a huge amount of money in a fund that was to get me a second opinion, to buy me a wheelchair. And then I also used to get some very nice things through the post. I remember once I got an exercise bike and there's me not being able to move my legs. And I was like, yes, come on, we can do this. That mindset and that other people, that the only thing was I was never to ask who it or they were. And that's an amazing thing. That is, yeah. And
it's a great story.
It's absolutely amazing. And for those who don't know me, I can toddle around now. So that's good. But you know, that having that level of making those relationships, yeah, you never know where somebody can help you. You never know. You don't go out to expect it. That's not what we're talking about.
So I was going to say, give without expectation.
Give without expectation. You know, it's just be kind. be nice and try and help people. I think that's really important.
Yeah, and I think it's that can-do attitude. I remember one day when I sort of pitched the same idea that I had had, and I did it once in the afternoon to, and they are friends, but and they're probably for the right reasons told me not to do it. They probably worry about me, and they think it's too much investment for something that won't.
I was going to say kill you with kindness, and there was no pun intended there, but you know that's a phrase, isn't it? Kill you with kindness.
Yeah, they basically said don't do it, and I said it in exactly the same way later to networking friends. And it wasn't just you should do it, but it was, so how are we going to do that then? And I was like, okay, it's a wee thing. And then, yeah, of course it is. And I think that's the difference. It's easier to be brave when you're not doing it on your own, I think.
I think when we talk about the entrepreneurial journey, when you first decide to become an entrepreneur, it's not always, you know, if you've come from a family that's not entrepreneurial, it can be, people want to protect you. They're worried about you. They're worried, you know, to do that. And you have to explain that. I think when you come into a group of business people, the right group of business people, you know, find your tribe. You know, there's lots out there. Find the right one for you. But you're actually lifted. I mean, this is one of the things I love about doing this radio show is that I come and I do it and my guests lift me up. It's like, wow, you know, these stories, this you... Because you can go away and talk about this and what you've learned and who you've met and how that person can help each other. And often the relationships that's built around in the radio studio go on and you never know where they're going to lead. But it's because we've had this time to sit down and actually chat and listen and see where that actually goes, you know. So I think it's super, super exciting. So, David, your networking journey, when you're going networking now, how do you manage that with having and please tell us about the kindergarten as well. You know, how do you manage that? You're going into a networking situation. Do you keep one business at your forefront? So tell us a little bit about that and about the kindergarten.
So what's your networking question?
The networking. So you're going in, you've got multiple businesses. How do you handle that? How do you go into that situation?
So I'll do a different networking event, and I'll be under a different banner, if you like. Because what generally happens is I'm in BNI under my IT company. I'm also under Synergy under my IT company. But conversations naturally come up about other things that you do. Yeah. If you truly get to know somebody and seek them out and you just listen to them and so on, if they're doing things right, they'll want to understand you as well. And those conversations naturally come about. So when people ask me, you know, about what, you know, the things that I do, I'll tell them I run multiple businesses, you know, and that's what I do. You know, that's what I do because that's the truth. But I'll generally go in with one hat. So there's another one I do of an evening where I'll go in with under my Atman hat, and I'll have one of my colleagues, my business partner Dan in Highway, he'll go in and he'll talk about the IT company in the same networking meeting.
Yeah.
So that's how I do that. The kindergarten came about as my partner. She used to go to the Steiner School in Canterbury. And I don't know if you've heard of that education. It's a German-based education around gentle parenting. It's very alternative. And the site has failed a number of times. And actually, globally, the Steiner schools have struggled because of they've not really got the business acumen along to go with it. So the site had been broken up. Somebody bought it to build on it, found out that they couldn't actually build on it. It's a beautiful site in Chartham, in Garlinge Green. And it's funny, it's got a beautiful theatre there, actually, the Garlinge Theatre. It's absolutely stunning, completely made out of wood, and it's absolutely beautiful. But the whole site is. So somebody bought the site, was going to put houses on it, realised it was an education order and couldn't. So it had an education order, so they had to keep it as it is. So the theatre got taken up by one person, another school took one part, and the other buildings, and the kindergarten was left. And what my partner Millie would say was a mainstream nursery was going to take over the kindergarten, and she was over my dead body, no pun intended. and she said, we're taking on the kindergarten. And so we did. January last year, we took it on, and we had a business plan together. We didn't know what sort of market there would be for an alternative. So everything on the site is completely natural. It's wood, it's wool. There's no plastics, there's no screens, no bright lights. They spend time outside most of the time, whatever the weather. Right. It's very nature-driven school. And we didn't know how much of a market there was going to be for it, but we're now about 47 children. Had to extend into a third room this year. And
well, that's always good news, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, we're about 18 months ahead of schedule. We thought this summer we might be thinking about opening a third room. We had to open it after about 4 months.
I love that. I just love that.
Yeah.
I just love that. So what's your partner's name? Because we can't call her your
Millie.
Partner. Millie. So yes. Millie. So Millie and you are working together. How does that work?
So I will do the business side of things.
Yeah.
I'll do whether it's the HR, the finance, the accounting, the rest of it, where Millie does all the day-to-day managing Ofsted and all those different parts of it. And manage. We've got a manager as well that is part of it, but they're doing the day-to-day looking after the admission side, and anything that's to do with the business and anything else, that's my role in the business there.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I've said to you that we've got five grown-up children. They're all entrepreneurs, and some of us work with each other in different roles. So I'll do some consultancy for them. Some of them, son's just built a platform that's working with another business in my daughter's business. So we work with that, and we try to put. I won't say they're strict guidelines, but having been brought up in family businesses myself, there is a real need to be able to split. What you're doing and be able to have that right. If I'm on, for example, one of the businesses' WhatsApp groups, I'm there as that consultant. I'm not there as mum. If I see something else, I need to be mum with a different hat on. And sometimes that gets really confusing. And sometimes we'll be on calls and they'll go, "Oh, mum." And I'm like, everybody knows, obviously, the relationship there.
Of course.
But you can't stop calling your mum. Yeah. And then they'll go, "Oh, did you have to say that? Did you have to say that?" So I think to have family time when you put the boundaries in and say, "We're not talking about that. This is family time." And if any of us slip over into that, we'll say, "We must book a meeting about that. Let's sort of try and take that away." Because otherwise you can be in business is so all engrossing. There's always something going around. In our head. Ross, how do you deal with do you literally sort of think of, right, I've taken the hat off of the performer. I mean, lecturing, yes, you're there in front, that's a performance of its own sake. Do you find difficulty changing from one thing to another?
Yeah, I suppose I do. I have some of my best ideas at the most inopportune times. Like, people are often ask how long it takes to write a show, and the shows are meant to be 2 hours. One of the biggest things that I've got to deal with is reining myself in and being strict with my own. If people keep asking questions, I'll keep answering, and like it will be the next day before the show is finished. I really need to keep stricter with my timings. And again, where I've been hiring the theatres myself, they don't mind. It's just another hour goes by that they get their theatre hire for, and the audiences don't seem to mind because they're getting more for their ticket price. But as I move on to other venues and events I'm not managing myself, I have to hit those deadlines.
You have to hit those deadlines, yes.
And, otherwise people can't go home on time, or worse still, they are going to go on home on time and there's no one left to lock up or tidy up. So it's, I need to get stricter with that. But I once had an idea for a show during a show.
Really? Go on, tell us about that. That sounds an interesting one.
No, it was just, I thought a great answer to that question would be, and then thought that could actually be a section in itself, and found that I was sort of semi-writing the next show whilst doing that one, and had to sort of have a word with myself and reapply myself to being in the moment. I get hit with ideas when I'm not trying to. So the answer to people's question, and people can email their questions in, and then that's usually the last part of the show, answering audience questions. It's one of the most often asked ones. How long does it take to write a show? And I really don't know. I don't sort of sit down and say, right, today I'm show writing. Mm. It just sort of comes together, and I might furiously stop what I'm doing to write down some notes so that I don't forget the idea and I can develop it later. But I couldn't put an amount of hours or an amount of weeks to it, because it sort of happens whether I want it to or not. And whether that's a good or a bad thing, I don't know. But I don't have any problems with not being creative enough. It's too creative. And like somebody started, you said about, is it weird to how people have started thinking of me as a performer and not necessarily how I see myself? People have started asking about merchandise being sold at the show. And it's like the idea of
merch, Ross. It's merch.
Sorry. Yeah. And it must be cooler. Yeah. So, but since they've started asking about that, I've just got so many ideas and I can't possibly do them all. But again, I don't sit down and think, right, this afternoon is dedicated to merch ideas. I'll just sort of be driving along and, that would be a good idea. I wonder if that's possible. Like today had an idea for sort of, could it be personalized as sort of a set up piece of artwork, but we somehow insert something personal into whichever one people buy. I don't know if it can be done, but I wasn't trying to think of it. It just appeared.
But I think, you know, like David, you were saying, it's about recognizing that idea and I love a notebook, jotting it down in a notebook or keeping it somewhere, because that will develop. And I think it's a nudge to say, look, this is what can be done. You might not be in the right headspace for doing that then, but it might not be for now. It might be for in the future. And I think definitely as you will progress to these bigger theatres, people are going to want merch. Yeah, they are. They definitely are, because there's something about going along to somewhere and taking something back with you. You know, let's go back to school days. What did we do when we went on a trip? You went and bought a pencil and a rubber, you know, unless you had lots of money, and then you might get some sweets as well. Yeah. But what, you know, if you think about it, it's not just about, I think I'd say to you, you know, it might be that you're feeling a little bit awkward. You don't want people spending more money, but actually they want these things. They want to remember.
It's tribal.
It is. It is. It's true. They want to be part of that group that enjoys that. And, you know, I'm sure we can think of lots of merchandise people that we can put you in. I just said to somebody the other day who was actually at the Whitstable morning group on another occasion, and had a very specific request. And he was telling me about all where he goes and what shows he goes to for these merchandise and all sorts of stuff. And he came up with it, and it was a very, I can't say what it is because it will give it away because it's coming out. But I was like, that is bang on. It's about knowing those people and then being able to say, but have you thought of this? And do you know that this thing is happening? So it's like you're sharing that idea with somebody, but they're also giving back lots to you as a business owner on where that could possibly be. But yeah, I definitely think that's going down the route. I mean, last night, you're talking about keeping to times. This was a really interesting thing last night. It was hubby's birthday, and we went up into London to go to Ronnie Scott's, the jazz club. And you're most probably too young to understand who Ronnie Scott's was, but you know, that's, you might have heard of the jazz club. And they've just opened the upstairs venue. And what they've done there is they've opened two shows. So the first one has to be finished. They've got to turn it round. It's a dining venue. So when the performers were on stage, they had, as well as doing jazz, they had their iPads, and they had to keep to time. There was no way. They had to be not past that minute. And they did it. And she said, we're just getting used to this, because normally we would be able to do, she said, we're not allowed to do an encore. They're not allowed to do an encore because they needed to get that changed round for the next lot of people coming in. And it's a Tuesday night, and they've just done it's booked up already. So yeah, it'd be interesting how you're going to manage your questions. I mean, there's many ways you can, as you say, they're coming in ahead of time as well, but like, you want to give that value, you want to answer those questions, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem is that I enjoy doing the show so much. I don't instead of thinking that the work's nearly done, I've got 20 minutes left, the show's nearly over, that's sort of a disappointing feeling to me rather than any other way around. But I am terrible for it. Apologies officially on air for being late today. But I think I said to you I was going to struggle, and I was teaching students today, and it finished at 1 o'clock, and I needed to leave right then. Like, I already had my shoes on, ready to go.
Ready to go, yeah.
And I needed to leave, but I find it extremely difficult when somebody does it. Just before you go, can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
And I do find it difficult to go, no, you can't, because this was an hour's meeting and I'm going now. I've got somewhere to be. And I should have done, in fairness to you two. But that one more question that they make sound like it's going to take 30 seconds takes a couple of minutes. And then I'm chasing my tail. And it's, I need to get better at it, not just in the shows, but in all walks of life.
I think, you know, time management actually is something we speak about an awful lot. And I think that when you're, say, for example, even if you're on a Zoom meeting, it is that what I've tend to do now is like, you know, hi, you know, da, 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 just to let you know, I need to be off of this call app because I have another one, sort of set that expectation. But it's different in shows. People always want that. But then perhaps there's going to be an opportunity for you to say, you know, I'll continue this conversation outside, or, you know, or in the foyer as they're getting people out. It's a tricky one.
Run a podcast
or do, yeah. I mean, there's so much that we can do now in business. It's really, really opened up, hasn't it? It's really, really interesting on how we can manage this. But I think what I would say is if the questions are coming in, that's shown real interest. People are really enjoying it. If they haven't got any questions, then, you know, you've obviously set the scene for them to ask more. It's a good way of doing it.
Yeah. Thanks for the advice. It's, I almost need an excuse to finish on time with things. Your idea of I got another meeting now would be a good one, but will work less well on stage.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not going to work on stage. But I think, you know, I've seen it with other people that take questions. If you go and see some of these shows where you've got an audience with, don't they? You know, you've got a famous person, an audience with, and the person who's narrating it, maybe that's what you're going to need. You're going to need a compere on with you to take the questions so that they can keep you in check.
Yeah, blame. Sandra's tried everything. She's we've tried her being sat somewhere in Ireland so that she can do some sort of bizarre code. So she sat there doing the wink that we've agreed.
that.
It's like two winks means 10 minutes to go, 1 minute means 5 minutes. And I've not only am I not taking any notice, I've forgotten to even look in that direction because I'm enjoying myself.
You're enjoying it.
It's the BNI 60, you know, you
yeah, the
60.
I think
she's bought me a timer. And then when I didn't keep an eye on the timer, she's now got one that like starts flashing when it gets there. She's tried everything to manage me. I'm unmanageable.
Is she gonna like cattle prod you and like right, that's it. Right, Sandra, if you're listening, I think you should be on stage. I think you need to control him. I think you need to be on there so he can't actually miss you.
I think next stop is like a taser or something.
I was gonna say, yeah, like sure. you will listen. But you know, I totally get it, and I'm sure you're the same, David. Like, you know, we have these prompts when you're on stage. You see it on the TED Talks now. There's even like glasses that you can wear with all different stuff in. We've got our watches. We've got all of this. When you are immersed in what you're doing, when you're in flow, and one of the words that you said earlier is when it's joyful, you know, I really hope that we're all creating joyful businesses for ourselves. You know, like me doing this today, this is not work. This is pure joy. Yeah, this is pure joy. If you're in that flow and you're in that joyful business, opportunities come. Most probably more opportunities come that way. I think David's nodding because you're really enjoying what you're doing, but it's really hard to keep to time. It is really hard to keep to time. And we have to find those little ways of doing it. I mean, if I'm on a Zoom call in the office and I've got my screens up, I've got a clock there, I've got a clock there, I've got, you know, whatever to try and keep me on to time, but it is hard.
It sounds really self-congratulatory, but I thought as a psychologist, I don't need a timer. I watch for audience cues. They'll tell me when's enough's enough because you'll start to see the body language of...
Vote with the feet.
when the audience is empty. Yeah, you could sort of still see the engagement is there. They're still leaning in and everything. And for anybody that's listening that might want to come to a show, I will never do this again. But the first one where I just kind of ran with it a little bit, we went over by an hour. Well, say we, like I'm trying to defer blame here. I went over by an hour and 20 minutes.
Right.
Like people hadn't realised until they sort of finished the show, came over for a quick chat, looked at their watch and realised that now the babysitters are a problem or the dog's been left too long, and I felt so guilty about it, but it's, I've never done it by that much again.
Yeah. But it's obviously, you know, that you're really enjoying it. Can you share some dates of some shows and how people find and book tickets?
Yeah, the website's still under construction, so don't judge me by it. But knowing I had this show today, it's functional. It doesn't look like it's going to look, but the booking links work, the dates are correct, the times are correct and things. So on the 14th of March, that Avenue Theatre in Sittingbourne, which is where it all began, that's the original show. So that would be a great one to start with. That's on the 14th of March.
And what's that one called?
That one's called Getting Away With Murder.
Oh, that was an evil laugh, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. So that's for anybody that's worried that they may be worded one day or for anyone that just wants to be better at it. So,
I love it.
I was thinking, what sort of audience is that?
Oh, some of the questions are worrying. In fact, for the first time, show before last, I had one audience question that I wouldn't answer. I had to go back to them and say that it's just not responsible to answer that on stage because they'd actually come up with a brilliant idea for, they was like, would this work?
And no.
And I was like, probably. And for that reason, I'm not going to tell 100 other people.
No, we're not going to share it here.
Call the police.
But afterwards, yeah.
It was awkward sort of having to go back
attend.
And say.
The police should attend, yeah, and learn. Yeah.
Worse than that, they do. Yeah, so I just thought it'd be like interested members of the public. But I don't think there's been a show for a while where there's not been prison officers, police officers, listeners in the audience are interested in whether they've come along. Well, I don't know if they've come along to learn more or almost to sort of check that I'm saying the right stuff. I don't know, but I've had some interesting conversations with them, maybe a bit of both, yeah. And then on the 26th of March, it's the one at the Arches in London Bridge, which I'm as excited as I am nervous about that one. That will be a real sort of step up for me. But
what's the capacity there?
350.
You'll do it. Yeah. Come on, you'll
so.
Do it.
Yeah, I hope so. But yeah, that will be hopefully a good one to come along to. And then on the 23rd of April, we're in Bromley at the Churchill Theatre. And then on the 2nd of May at the Tom Thumb in Margate. But it's too late for that one. That's the one that went really well earlier. But because of that, there'll be new dates headed soon. So if you go to the website, which is simply drfriday.co.uk, all the dates are on there. And as I say, it might not look like much yet, but everything's functional.
But do you know what? I think that's absolutely great because you've been honest and open. And this is what this is about. It's about, you know, business is hard. Doing something is hard. And we all learn as we go along. And do you know what? It's all right not to have everything all shiny and bright.
No, failure is a huge part of this. And yeah. We've got to stop talking like it's a negative. You know, if you're a successful businessman, you've found somebody who's failed a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love, you know, that your shows are selling out and, you know, it's going to be a case of getting there quick because, I put it out on my family WhatsApp the other day.
Oh, thank
and
you.
They was like, Mum, what are you doing?
It's created some interesting family conversations.
Absolutely,
that's for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, we had that conversation about, like, what's this about? How's this going? How is somebody networking? This is what was, how is somebody networking? How is this doing? And you know, it really makes you think about this. And one of the, you know, where this is taking me is that the great, and I think he's a great guy, Daniel Priestley, who wrote The Key Person of Influence, actually booked him when he first started for a BNI conference. And now he's created Score App, he's got Dent, he's got whatever. But The Key Person of Influence, business-wise, is about becoming known for that particular thing. So, you know, writing the book, doing the show, having the speaking engagements. Who are you as a business owner? Who are you attracting? Who do you want to serve? There's a great book by James Ashford called Selling to Serve, and that's for accountants and bookkeepers. But I love that title, Selling to Serve. Yeah. And it's when somebody is passionate about what they do, which you both of you guys are, you know, in all the fields that you're in, it can be a little bit daunting and to think, how do I get to more people? But more people want to know, you know, more people want to know about what you do, about all of the knowledge that you've got. And David, there's so many people that's going to also want to know about you and how to become that entrepreneur. I was going to say serial entrepreneur, but that's, I don't think I'm a serial entrepreneur, as in I have one business after, and I'll go, oh yeah, I'm going to go and do that now. Right. I always say, when I grow up, what am I going to do next? But that's how my brain works with it. What I see with you is that you've got those multiple things going on. Yeah. And your brain is managing it, which I don't understand, because I find it very difficult. I struggle going from one client to another client, putting that different hat on. All right, that client's in that sector now, I have to deal with that. How do you deal with that?
Because it's not about me. And you've got to have a bit of humility about it. So I wouldn't define myself as an entrepreneur yet. And the reason I say that is, until you've got a business that 100% runs completely without you, or you've successfully exited that business, then until that point, you're not. You're a wantrepreneur until that point.
I love that, wantrepreneur.
And I'm still on that journey. But the truth is, you can't do it alone. And it's not about making it about, you know, about me. In actual fact, it's about the team of people that I've got around me. So the IT company would have been solving tickets all afternoon. And, you know, I know we've even picked up new business this afternoon. But I didn't have any touch points on that. But it takes time to get to that point. But it's, in actual fact, the trick there is to master and understand the real fundamentals and basics around building a business, getting those fundamentals in place, but also having the right trusted people around you that understand what that vision is. You know, why are you building this business? You know, the Simon Sinek's why, you know, all that kind of stuff. Getting to buy into that journey, want to be part of that, trust them, and but also get to know those people, because they've got hopes and dreams, and as well, enable them to do their best work and get out of the way. Enable them to be better, because my team are better at it, you know, the day to day than I will ever be. I did it at the very beginning when it was just me from the IT company, but they're better at it than I. And that's what you want. You've got to get your ego out of the way, and you've got to understand, actually want people to be much, much better at it than you are. Enable them to enjoy their job and fulfill their dreams, you know, and what's important to them in their life. If you can do that, and then you're way to building a business. So you can, that's how you can run multiple businesses, when you've got the building blocks in place at each one. And that does take time. But if you get those right, get the right people in and build those people, that's how you do it. So it's not that I'm, you know, my phone's gone off 150 times, and I'm sure, and it will continue to keep doing so, and that's okay. And it's, you've got to put those boundaries in place, but, you know, and understand, you know, when to get involved and when not to get involved. But a lot of the time it's about the others. I couldn't do this without any of my other team members. They're the ones that take the credit, because they're the ones that are doing that. They're there at the forefront, on the front line every single day, you know, developing and building it. And I've just got, my job is to guide them, firefight when they need me to, and step in when need to, but to manage the expectations, and set those building blocks in the first place. But that's the key to run multiple businesses, is having key people in place, and trusting them. Get out of the way. Don't make it about you. Help build their dreams, and they'll help build yours.
I think what you've explained and what you are is a superb leader. And there's the five levels of leadership, and the top level of leadership is exactly what you've just explained. What you're trying to do is not about you as the leader. It's about making those people better than you, enabling them to be better than you. So I would say, Ross, for example, when you're teaching your students, it's about, look, I can impart this knowledge on you, but go out and do your thing. Go out and be that better person. Go out and be that better business owner or lecturer or whatever they want to do with that world. And you know, this is what comes across with both of you. It's that enjoyment of what you do, but it's not about ego.
It's servant leadership. So yes, it's top down. So rather than the sort of traditional way that the boss is at the top and dictating down, no. You're at the bottom of the pyramid. You know, flip that pyramid upside down. You're at the bottom. You serve the others. Enable them to do their, to do a fantastic job, and let them do it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, that is the key, isn't it? And sharing knowledge, giving time to come on shows, to come on radio shows, to write pieces for the press, to, you know, go into I'm very passionate about this, going into schools and colleges and saying, being honest, yeah, this is what I've done wrong, this is what I've done right, this is what you can do, this is, you know, don't just do what everybody thinks you should do. What do you actually want to do? What do you actually want to create? And
give it all away.
Yeah, give it all away.
Give it all away. You know, they say, you know, this expression, don't give away, you know, the cow with the milk. You know, no, give away the farm. Wait till it, to the point where it's uncomfortable. When you're giving away that much, you will, you know, again, that reciprocity, but people get scared. They don't want to, I don't want to give out my pricing on my website. I don't want to give out all that specialist knowledge. I don't want to give all that information away. But it's, that's the trick, getting comfortable, being very uncomfortable.
Getting comfortable. Yeah. And I think, you know, another way I'd put that is, in business terms, is collaboration. Do not be afraid of people in the same position as you. We're going to find it very hard to find somebody in the same position as you, Ross. But what I'm saying is, you know, whatever business you're in, you will do more business with somebody in the same industry as you. You will, if you take that time to get to know each other, because you will each do something a little bit different and you've got different personalities. And you will do that. They are the best group. You know, you get so much business from that if people just understood that and collaborated more. And it's not about, yeah, share your prices, share your ethos, because everybody's different. People buy from people, don't they? You know, we'll all choose somebody else to go down. I always remember my dad saying to me when I was, he used to take me to school, like, okay, there's an empty shop there, what would you put in it? Yeah. And I'd go, oh, well, there's not a hairdresser. And he was like, yeah, but it's also good to have two of the same, because people will choose different ones. How many times you go down a high street? Yeah, we can use this analogy in any way. You know, you'll see, if you come to a seaside town, you will see more cafes, fish and chip shops than you ever think will ever stay afloat. But you'll go there and they'll all be different. They'll all be busy because they all attract somebody else, you know. Actually, Ross, that's a really good thought. Do you know anybody else in your position doing what you're doing? Lecturer, and I mean, how's that looked at? How do your colleagues take? Right, we've got this lecturer here, and now he's doing shows, and now we're talking about merchandise.
That's where Ross's competition is different. So Ross's competition is Netflix, and it's, you know, people are about what they're going to spend their time to, you know, to do that downtime, to go and learn to be entertained by something.
Yeah,
you're competing with other forms of entertainment. That's where your competition goes, rather than something that's directly exactly the same.
Yeah, how do you feel about that? He's thinking.
I think I should listen to David more. I've learned a lot by sitting here. I mean, you sort of started the show saying, oh, we've both got different hats and things. I suppose we're similar in that way, but you obviously understand business and know what you're doing. I am shocking at business. I haven't approached this from a business point of view at all. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm trying to figure it out as I go along. All I've done really is sort of created something that's the best thing that I can create, and then tried to improve on it. Every show, there's not been two shows the same, because I'll learn from each one, and it will adapt slightly, maybe in a almost unnoticeable way to other people. But the wording will change, or the pacing will change just slightly, and hopefully they're getting better. But there's no strategy. Some of the things you're saying, I kind of understand what you mean, but I haven't heard the terms before because I've not got a business background. I've learned a lot. I was going to ask you, actually, did you learn business from running a business, or did you study business and then run a business?
It's both. And I was going to say, we're not dissimilar, because the truth is, I don't know what I'm doing either. I think most businesses are the same. We are all, and this is the big secret that people don't understand, we're all making it up as we go along.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're all doing our best. What you said there was beautiful, because you said I'm doing providing the best I possibly can. And that's absolutely what we're all doing. That is what business, that is running a business, that is doing the same thing. And the truth, to answer your question, it's twofold. So I think everyone should be a student forever, right? I think you should be always learning. When you realize I'm stealing it and I can't remember exactly, but basically you get this competence, you don't know what you don't know. All of a sudden you think I'm really competent, then you realize, actually, I know nothing. And I have those pitfalls all the time. I'm constantly thinking, there's not enough time to learn everything there is. I must get better. And I make mistakes every day, and I'll continue to keep making mistakes. And that's okay. So you learn from your mistakes. You continue to keep learning continuously, But unless you execute and give it a go and try, like you do with your shows, every time you'll try something different, or that landed, or that didn't land. I used to do the same in my talks, you know, try... Many a time I'll try and drop a joke, nothing. You know,
and tumbleweed.
Yeah, absolutely. Tumbleweed. Okay, don't do that joke again. You know, but you learn on the fly. So you're constantly learning and finding time to educate yourself and find alternative, other creative inspirations, whatever it might will be. There's always a better way or a different way of doing it. The education system has taught us there's one right answer. It's nonsense. You know, there's always, you know, what, just because something's true, think about just to science and, you know, and I mean, what was something that was true 10 years ago, it's categorically true, has since been proved not to be true, you know, and there'll be more and more instances in business and in life where just because it's true today doesn't mean it's going to be true tomorrow. We're always going to be open-minded to that third alternative opinion that something might be different. So I do both. As I learn every day by running businesses, and I learn by continuously trying to educate myself to get better and be the best and deliver the best I possibly can. In the same way as you do.
I think that's where the business. I think that's where the business books come in, you know, whether you get them on audio version or whatever. It is that continual personal development and putting yourself in a room with people that make you feel uncomfortable. Now, what I mean by that is people that you deem to be or perceive to be better than you. Okay. And therefore then you learn from those. And that's an awkward thing to be in. But I talk about, when we talk about going back to networking, I talk about that you'll start off hopefully in a room that makes you feel comfortable. Yeah. And then hopefully you'll find other connections with people that say, oh, I go to this one or I go to that one. Go to something that may make you feel a little bit uncomfortable in where you feel you are in the business journey. I was very fortunate enough to help run a Commonwealth networking organisation. And, you know, we're dealing with embassies, ambassadors, etc. But we was bringing small business owners to that to give them opportunities. Put yourself in a room, then you get other experiences, you meet some incredible people. And do you know what? Those people are human beings. Yeah, just like we were saying, they're just human beings. And they go, oh yeah, I'm just normal. You know, like we're going to see you on big stages, and we're going to see, we are, Ross. I'm sorry. I've said that's going to happen.
Mind up.
I've called it. I mean, you just know it's going to happen. You just know it's going to happen. I think there might be me and David behind you, like pushing you on here because, you know, really want to do that. But, you know, that is going to happen should you want to accept that's going to happen. And sometimes that can be scary. Yeah. But do you know how I would phrase that? There are people out there desperate to know the information that you can impart and the stories that you can tell and the help that you can give. You are doing a disservice if you don't get that out to more people. Does that make sense?
No, you've nailed it there. So in actual fact, you've got a responsibility now.
No pressure. Ross's face is looking like,
to get that, to, you know, for as many people to, you know, to see that. And, yeah, and the way you're doing it, like you say, doing a disservice, you don't. So a few months ago, or when you started this, the idea to be where you are today would have been quite scary, or almost impossible, right? But you've got that far. You know, you're already, you know, you're already making a massive success for it. So now it's a case of, you want to be at the West End with this, right? You really want to be able to take this, maybe even international.
I would love that. Yeah,
you'd love that. That's right. So the
his face is not saying that, but the words are coming out of his mouth, but his face is not saying it.
And the only reason that won't happen, whether at Broadway or at the West End, the only reason it won't happen is because you didn't give it a shot. And so in actual fact, 10 times your ambition. So if you say, okay, I'd love to do a big London show once, sort of thing. Okay. You could work really hard and you might just fall short of it, or you might just make it. Or say, no, I want to go international with this, because your actions to between now and an international show, okay, are very different between those and doing a medium show in London. What you do to get to that show are very, very different. So if you 10x your ambitions, say, what would I need to do to take this internationally? Those set of actions will be different. Even if you fall short of being international, you might work the West End.
Yeah, it's so true. It is setting that intention. Really, I think having a look at what, and this is for all business people, what your life-work balance, what do you want that to look like? Not your work-life balance. What do you want your life-work balance to be? Yeah, and I think when, this is definitely something we all share, is that we love what we do so much that actually we spend far more time than my plan says on my life work balance to do.
It's not work,
I just,
is it?
I just can't stop it. I get back and I'm like, oh, my husband just say, oh, here she goes. Right, it'd be blah, 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 blah. I've just done this, I've done that. I met that person. Oh, yeah, those two people can go together. Yeah, I must do an introduction into that. Because it's
fulfilling.
It's fulfilling. And, you know, my business, you know, the Jill connection, the I in the Jill is an exclamation mark because I go at it like with such, oh my God, what's going to happen today? Who am I going to meet? Who can you help? Who can you listen to? Who can you learn from? And I think this is what I love about these radio shows. We all learn from each other. There'll be something, there'll be a book, there'll be energy, there'll be connections. And if you think we multiply that and go and help more people, then, you know, we're not going to be in the mess that we are at the moment. We're going to help share that knowledge, be open and collaborative and not secretive. Share your prices, share your structure, share your suppliers.
Your fails.
Yeah, share your fails.
Absolutely.
Yeah, share your fails. But we're not gonna cover the question that you're not allowed to answer about that murder. Okay. we're not gonna do that one. But we're just, you know, I cannot believe that we have just sat here for 2 hours. That has just gone. In fact, apologies that we didn't play the song in the middle, because we normally played that and we normally give some shout outs. But I think you'll agree that we've had amazing conversations here today. But I just want to give a couple of shout outs to Synergy Networking. There are lots and lots of events going on for Synergy, and you just go to the Synergy website, look up networking events, and I've got to give a big shout out for BNI, a global organisation. Change My Life is changing these gentlemen's lives here. And, you know, go along and see, you know, or if you want an invitation to a BNI meeting, you can ask any one of us here and we will be happy to put you in touch with the right people. I put members into BNI all the time from the accountancy and bookkeeping sector. So, you know, it's that they're all great. There is something out there for you. Go and find it. Start off and work your way around and do that. But thank you so much, gentlemen, for today. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope you have too. Just remember, this one is available on the on DAB now. We're going out to 190,000 people. So it's a weekly show, and it is recorded. So if you've missed it or you want to listen again, you can go back for the next week and download it and listen to it. But next week we have Linda Cloak, who is going to be on the show. And really looking forward to that. Is there anybody you'd like to give a quick shout out to before we leave? Maybe your partners?
Absolutely. Of course, to our partners. We couldn't do this without them. But I think for the Synergy Networks, it's nice to have something new.
Yeah.
I love BNI. You know, I've been a big part of my life for 4 years, but it's great to have something new and different. And Synergy are really coming up with some fresh energy and some fresh ideas.
Lovely, lovely. Ross, what about yourself?
Yeah, to Sandra for consistently trying to control my terrible timekeeping. But also, I think when you said earlier, there's a networking event for everybody, and I think some of them are so different, and I think we all just need to try and work together to try and get across. I do get that resistance still sometimes. Do you want to come to a networking event? And I haven't even said which one before. People have gone, oh no, I couldn't do that. But everybody that does go along then says they've enjoyed it, that it wasn't what they thought it was, and it was a lot more enjoyable, and I just want to come back. But it's just trying to get break down those misconceptions about it, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think, yeah, just have a look around. There's plenty out there. Something for absolutely everybody at every time of day. And if you're not ready to do presentations, that's absolutely fine too. There's plenty out there that you don't have to do. And you can always say, not ready to do that, and they won't put you on the spot. Thank you very much, David and Ross. And we're going to go out with The Night You Murdered Love.